Pushkin.
You can find inspiring stories almost anywhere. For instance, check out the co-founders of Girls Who Do Interiors. This Miami-based design company was started by three friends when they were still in school. And right from the start, they turned to Chase for Business for everything from banking and payment acceptance to credit cards. And they handle them all in one place with the Chase mobile app. It's so important to have that kind of help when you're just starting out. Learn more at chaseforbusiness.com. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank N.A., member FDIC.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm Imogen Westnights, and I wrote The Strange Survival of Guinness World Records for The Guardian, and it's the story of the week.
Before we get into today's story, I wanted to hear a related story from you, AJ Jacobs, a constant guest on our show.
You can't get rid of me.
We're doing a show about the Guinness Book of World Records, and I know that you have attempted, or maybe succeeded, I don't know, in breaking a record.
I attempted and did not succeed in breaking a...
Is this hard for me to bring up? Is it painful?
There's some scars. There's some mental scars, but I'll go into it anyway. What happened was I was writing a book about assembling the largest family tree in history. As part of the book, I thought it'd be fun to hold the biggest family reunion ever in New York City, invite all 8 billion of my cousins, and try to break the world record, which at the time was about 6,500 people. So I looked into getting it as a world record, and it's very complicated. They didn't make me, but they really encouraged me to hire an adjudicator for a lot of money.
Do you remember how much they were asking for?
Well, there were different levels, but one of the levels was like $10,000. And you could do it yourself, but it seemed very discouraged to do it yourself. Instead, at the time, I hired a friend had come up with sort of a scrappy alternative to Guinness called Record Setters.
He took on Big Guinness.
He took on Big Guinness. So I hired him for a much, much smaller amount. It was like $50.
How many people did you invite?
Well, again, I invited 8 billion because the premise was...
I didn't get an invite.
Well, you didn't look in the right places. It was like, on my Facebook. You were invited. Believe me.
We're definitely related. Yeah.
Yeah, as an Ashkenazi Jew, you're probably like my seventh cousin.
We should not marry.
Well, I have a section in the book about cousin marriage. It's a complicated moral issue.
Oh, we're going to end it there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Writing is hard. Who's got that kind of time when you're already busy trying to be Joel Stein? So he turns on a mic, maybe twiddles a knob, calls a journalist friend who's got an actual job. Auditory, single story, just listen to smart people speak. Conversation filled with information, it's the story of the week.
Imogen Westnights investigated the curious survival of Guinness World Records for The Guardian. Imogen, how did you first get interested in this story?
So it was kind of accidental in that I was at the Guinness Storehouse, which is a sort of tourist attraction in Dublin, where you learn about the beer, basically. And there was this room that was out of bounds, you know, but the door was slightly open. And I don't know, I just curiosity got the better of me. And I went in there and There was nothing in there except a table which had three Guinness Book of Records on it from 1994-2012. So I went in there and I was looking at them, and I had never thought about the connection between the brewery and Guinness World Records before, and it all kind of went from there.
So how did the Guinness Book of World Records start?
So it began with an argument, I suppose, that took place in 1951, where the then managing director of the Guinness Brewery, a man called Sir Hugh Beaver, was on a hunting party, and he and his group got in this fight about which was the fastest game bird. And then he had this brainwave that this must happen all of the time. In pubs, people get into arguments. And so if you could put together a book that had all the facts in it and then put it behind the bar, it would help them sell more beer.
Do you believe this story? The more I'm listening to you say it, Sir Hugh Beaver, right?
He's real.
On a hunting trip.
I promise.
Really? I don't trust these people at all. How did they go about putting a book of records together?
So they did it remarkably quickly. I think he decided he wanted to do this in 1954. And the first edition came out the following year. And the people that he went to do this were a pair of identical twins, eccentrically enough, who ran a fact provision service for Fleet Street's newspapers, which is like where most of the UK's newspapers were based at the time.
So if you needed a fact instead of Googling it, you would call these twins?
Yes.
And then for your article?
Exactly.
So what are these twins? Their names are Ross and Norris McWhirter. What are they like?
Very eccentric. They were a real pair of weirdos by all accounts. I mean, in a good way, in some ways. Although it became their profession to keep records, they were doing it for fun. Since they were really little, they used to keep these scrapbooks where they would write down facts that they learned.
That seems adorable, like identical twins who are keeping a book of facts.
Yeah, it seems
like also sounds
like
a horror movie, though, doesn't it?
Yes, I think, you know, it's a little bit The Shining somehow. Mm-hmm. They were odd characters. One of them got murdered by the IRA.
Murdered?
Yes.
Wait, dwell on the murder, please.
So he was shot in 1975 by the Irish Republican Army because he publicly offered this reward for any information leading to the conviction of terrorist bombers in Britain. But Norris stayed on at the book until the 90s.
Wait, so he was sort of conservative,
very
I assume.
Very conservative, and so was Norris. Like, Norris was one of the first people who was really anti the European Union and went against sanctions against apartheid South Africa. Some pretty unsavory.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so were they conservative in their choices of what records to put into the Guinness Book of World Records?
There was absolutely no mention of anything to do with sex in the book. No sex records.
Which was horribly disappointing. I was so into the Guinness Book of World Records when I was like 7, 8 years old. I would look and I was like, oh, we have no idea how big the world's biggest penis is. This is
right.
This is a fact we need.
I know. Yeah. You would think that the pursuit of fact would come above his kind of conservative views in that way, but it didn't. It didn't.
I probably couldn't have handled the biggest penis. That would have just ended my whole social life.
No one could have handled it.
So if there were no penises, what were the records in these very early editions?
A lot of them are geographic records, tallest mountain, deepest depression in the earth's surface, stuff like the highest lifetime yield of a cow for milk.
Oh, what is the highest lifetime yield of a cow for milk?
God, am I going to remember this? I remember the name of the cow, Manningford Faith Jan Graceful.
You memorized the name of the cow?
How could you forget Manningford Faith Jan Graceful?
Wait, I have it here. It was 325,130 pounds. That's a lot of milk.
I can't even picture how much milk that is.
That's the wrong way to measure milk in pounds. No one talks about how many pounds of milk they have.
No, exactly.
It's gallons. Who's running Guinness World Records now? Does Guinness still own it?
No. They sold it. I mean, it's changed hands many times. So the editor of the book is a man called Craig Glenday, who has been in that job for over 20 years now, I think. So he's the kind of head honcho, and he gets to say what goes in the book and has all this experience over the years and has adjudicated a load of records himself, been all over the world. So he's the man in charge.
What's he like? What does he look like?
I want to make a comparison to something you won't have seen, which is there was a cartoon in this country called Thomas the Tank Engine that had a character.
Well, of course we have Thomas the Tank Engine.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, my son had still probably somewhere has a whole box full of Thomas
stuff.
Okay,
but did you have the TV show?
Yeah, we did.
Right. So there's a character in that called the Fat Controller, who is this like almost spherical man.
The human.
The human. Craig Glenday looks exactly like him. Picture that man. That's what he looks like.
And so where did you meet with him?
I met him the first time when I went to see my first record attempt that I ever witnessed, which was someone trying to pogo stick over the most consecutive cars.
Wait, you got to watch this?
Yeah, it was great.
Was it frightening?
Yes. Yeah, I was really nervous for this guy. And also, I wasn't expecting Craig to be there necessarily. I'd just been told they were doing a record attempt and I could go along and watch. But he was there. He was doing the adjudicating himself.
Was this pretty serious? Like, was it tense there?
Yeah, I mean, it was a strange atmosphere because obviously pogo sticking is like one of the most ridiculous things you can see somebody do. And yet the atmosphere was like very somber and tense because this meant a lot to him.
Plus, death is on the line.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of bouncing around in this big forecourt at the Olympic Park practicing. And he did fall over on one of the jumps. So I was
But you get a couple chances?
I think he got three chances, although he did it in the first try. Every Guinness record attempt gets three goes.
Like, what kind of adventures has the editor Craig Glenday had?
He has just been absolutely everywhere. I mean, he said he got stranded for a week in Punta Arenas, which is like on the furthest southern tip of Chile, with the band Fallout Boy. You remember Fallout Boy?
I know the name.
I actually was a huge fan of them, but I'm not going to get into it because it's embarrassing. So he got stranded for a week with the band Fallout Boy in Punta Arenas in the southern tip of Chile because they were trying to fly to Antarctica because they wanted the record for the fastest time to perform a gig on every continent. But they couldn't fly because of weather conditions. So he was just stranded there with this band. And the locals thought he was a member of Fallout Boy. And all the-
Even though he looks like the top hat guy from Thomas the Tank
Engine? He could not look less like he was in a popular emo band if he tried.
Has, like, Craig Glenday had dangerous experiences?
He has. He told me this one story about a time he went to Moscow to adjudicate an attempt of the largest pouring of concrete in history. And he was standing on the side of this huge building site hole in Moscow. And they failed. They didn't get the record because it was too cold. They couldn't pour the concrete. And it was very hard to say no. He ended up having to give the record and revoking it the next day because he just thought, I actually don't know what's going to happen to me if I'm standing here at the edge of basically a pre-dug grave and they've got loads of concrete and they seem very angry with me.
That's a smart policy to like give it to you in person and then revoke it once you're on the plane.
Right, exactly.
After the break, Guinness will sell out to an evil dictator. But first, our advertisers are going to try and set a record for the least amount spent for an ad on a podcast.
Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you, who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakeables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase Mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase, NA member FDIC, 2024, JPMorgan Chase & Co. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
So I'm assuming they can't sell many books at this point. People just go online and look at this for free. So how does this company make money?
So they twigged this, obviously, with the advent of the internet, that people could see sensational things, bright pictures, big facts, big figures, just by Googling them.
Big giant penises.
Giant penises at the touch of a fingertip, yeah. Exactly. That's a horrible phrase, unfortunately, but I've used it
horrible.
Now. So they started to kind of diversify, and one of the ways that they did this was that they realized they could offer a kind of PR brand consultancy type service. So they specifically started catering to commercial clients for record breaking. So let's say Ford goes to Guinness and says, we have a new car. We want to put Ford's name in the press somehow, and we'd like to do it by breaking a record. Can you help us come up with a record that would suit us to break?
How much does that cost?
It starts at £11,000, which is roughly $14,000.
This explains all of the crappy publicist emails I'm constantly getting, right? Like this year, Pizza Hut breaks the world's largest pizza record.
Exactly.
Like my email box is flooded with this crap.
Well, someone paid a lot of money for that.
Are there moral guide rails on this project, like the Guinness records? Like, will they do healthiest cigarette, or like the person who can do the most shots of Jägermeister, or like a guy who can shoot the most holes in a target shaped like a nun? Like, what are their limits?
There's some interesting rules about this. You can do a record that puts yourself in danger as long as you consent. What you can't do is a record that puts anyone else in danger. So like you can set yourself on fire should you choose. You can't set yourself on fire at the post office. And then there's things like they retire records when they start to feel like, we're kind of dicing with some political things we don't want to be doing anymore. Like they used to have one which was largest terrorist organization, which was last awarded to Al-Qaeda in 1989. Physically.
That's not fair, because
they were never given a certificate, apparently.
They've really fallen by the wayside, too, Al-Qaeda. They wouldn't hold that now.
They're out on their ass.
It's almost unfair that they still have the record.
Well, it's been revoked. The record no longer exists. I think they eventually were like, I don't think Guinness World Records should really be saying what is and isn't a terrorist organization. Like, that doesn't feel like within our remit. So that one's been scrapped.
But don't they like work with dictators as part of their consultancy gig where you can bring them in?
They have done. They did quite a lot of work with the government of Turkmenistan between 2007 and last year, I think. And they have a pretty shoddy human rights record. But as it happens, the dictator of Turkmenistan, the then dictator, whose name is Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov. So he is a big GWR fan, and he wanted to get them to award some records. So there were things like the city of Ashgabat got the record for the highest density of buildings with marble white cladding. And another one.
That's such a dictator record.
Yes, isn't it? It's all like
they
giant buildings.
They love marble so much.
They love marble. And another one was the largest architectural image of a star.
I don't know what that means.
It's just a really big star they built. And since then, I asked Craig about it, and he was like, no, that was actually a big misstep. We shouldn't be, you know, we want to look a little bit more carefully about who we're working with.
So corporations are paying money to get their dumb records broken so that I get these awful emails from publicists. But normal people like the pogo stick guy are still doing it too, right?
Yeah, no.
And what kind of people are they who do this?
The adjudicators, I think they receive as many as like 100 requests every day from all over the world about new record creations. And it is just normal people who think they're really good at something. But then there's this class of people who make it almost into a sport in its own right. The person I met who has the most ever had over 700.
Oh, that's too many. That's like your life's work, right? I mean, is that like your full-time job?
It's not his full-time job. So this guy, his name's Ashrita Furman. His birth name is Keith. But he renamed himself because he's a follower of an Indian spiritual teacher called Sri Trinmoy, and they all rename themselves. But he's just a guy from Jamaica, Queens, who runs a health food shop.
And so how did he first get into this?
So he started following this teacher when he was 16. And as part of the teachings of this teacher, they have to do a lot of kind of physical exercises as a means of transcending the body and things like that. So the teacher had signed up his followers for this cycling marathon around Central Park. And Ashrita hadn't actually signed up because he was never very athletic and not into that kind of thing. But he went to a meeting with his teacher, and the teacher was going around the circle and saying, okay, how many miles is everybody going to beat in this race? You know, 200, 300. And then the teacher turns to Ashrita and goes, and you, Ashrita, 400? And he's like, oh my God, he wants me to do this thing to prove, you know, my worth. And he'd never trained. He had a bike.
What?
But he'd never cycled any distance before. He went straight home and wrote a will and left all his wealth and possessions to his roommate. And then the following day, he cycled 405 miles around Central Park. And he did it by meditating. Yes. And so he got off this bike, legs jelly, and was like, I can break records. He immediately made the connection with the book because he liked the book. I can get in the book.
That's like 15, 20 hours of cycling?
It's a long time.
To do it that many times.
It's unthinkable. And, you know, with no training whatsoever. So I think he must have the build for these things, naturally. But he said it's not really physical at all. It's all mental.
Oh, I don't know. Really?
So he says.
And so he started breaking records just for fun? Or what was his...
He thought this was a really great way that he could promote the message of his teacher and to, like, promote the value of transcendental meditation to a wider audience.
I think it's working. Our audience is finding out about it. I think it's a good plan he had. And what's he like as a person?
I actually really liked him. He's like very warm to be around, super enthusiastic. I went to see him at his house in Queens, and, you know, he's 67 or whatever he is, and he looks good. I think the guy does a lot of exercise, really, you know, keeps himself in good health, and he just loves records. He loves it. You know, his eyes light up talking about it.
Wait, what kind of records does he have?
He's got everything. He's got some really oddball ones, like rolling an orange a mile with your nose the fastest. There's standing on a yoga ball for the longest time. The fastest mile done, like, forward rolls. He's got that one. A lot of balancing records, pint glasses on his chin.
I'm seeing he won a potato sack race against a yak in Mongolia.
He did, yeah. So he quite often likes to do them in slightly flamboyant ways, because obviously if the point is to create publicity for this spiritual teacher, the more kind of flashy it can be, the better.
So he's just looking for records that he can break, or he's just has these weird hobbies that... How does this work?
So I think it's a bit of both. It's a strategic feat, almost more than it is a physical one, in that he's really good at identifying what he calls soft records. So a soft record is a record that he thinks hasn't yet been broken to the fullest extent of human capability, or like a record that you or I, if we had the time and the energy, we could break.
Oh, so he's looking around strategically for ones that like a normal human can break.
Yes.
Is he still breaking records?
He is, although less so than he used to, I think partly because of his age, and also he's, I think, various things in his personal life. He's got to focus more on this shop that he runs. But he's still really invested in helping other people do it.
Did he try and help you break any records?
Well, yes, in a manner of speaking. So when I first went to the Guinness offices, they asked me if I wanted to try and break a record while I was there, which I did. And the one that they picked out was standing on one leg blindfolded. So,
oh, well, that's just a prank. This is what they do to journalists. Journalists come in, they're like, would you like to break a record? Here, let me flip through and see what I can find.
And then they push me over on the floor. So, yeah, I said, yeah, cool, I'll do that. I mean, guess, how long do you think the record stood at the time?
I'm going to guess like 2 hours.
The record at the time was 32 minutes. And so when I heard 32 minutes, I was like, holy shit, that's actually like not that much. Maybe.
That sounds like too much, though, to want to do.
It should do. I think I was very, very foolish to be like, yeah, great. I could definitely get like Well, they were
pushing you into it. It wasn't your fault.
But I gave this a go. And you get three chances.
Wait, so they didn't give you any training?
They were just like, off you go. Because they knew, right, that I wasn't going to be able to break this record.
That's mean.
It was mean. So I tried, and I got up to 30 seconds or something. Just terrible. Really no good at all.
Yeah, that's not great.
So I tried this record, failed, went home, didn't think about it. But then I was talking to Sharita Furman about this record, and his whole face lit up. And he was like, that's a soft record, classic soft record. 32 minutes is not so long. You could do that if you put in the time. So I was like, okay, really fired up having met this guy. I go home and I start practicing. You know, my housemates think I'm going insane. And I get up to 12 minutes and 8 seconds, which is not that bad. I mean, it's not the record, but it's like a lot better. But it was at that point when I got up to 12 that I thought to check. Because obviously, this is actually like almost a year after I first met Craig and did this attempt. But then I checked whether it had been broken, and it had been. So it was now an hour.
By Furman. I bet Furman did it behind your back. He encouraged you to do it, and then he broke it himself?
If it had been him, I would have been like, fair play. It was wide open,
really?
That goal. Yeah, he deserves it. Okay. He knows what he's doing. But it was someone else's.
But it wasn't him?
No, someone in India broke it by loads, doubled it. It was like an hour and 6 minutes now. So I was really demoralized. I was like, there's absolutely no way I'll ever get up that high. So I stopped. But yeah, he did inspire me to try.
How much time do you think you devoted to this?
Probably not that long. I mean, 10 hours maybe total.
That's a lot.
In a way.
For that task.
I mean, just like a little bit every day for a while.
And what are some of the things that like motivate people to do these things? Like what are the great stories you heard?
So I think that the one that I heard where I kind of realized what the heart of my story really was, like why it was worth writing about this thing, was the woman with the longest fingernails. Do you remember seeing that picture in the book as a kid? I do.
I do. I remember the longest nails the most, and the longest hair, and the tallest person, because they were all, it all shook me a little bit.
Almost everyone I asked, and I asked everybody of my acquaintance at the time, like, what's the one you remember? They all said fingernails. I don't know why quite.
But why?
I think it's because if you've never seen that before. You don't know, A, what fingernails look like when they grow out that long until you see it, and you're like, whoa. But then also, how do you live? The questions posed by that photograph, like, how do you type? How do you do less salubrious things you do with your hands every day, you know?
The woman who does have the longest fingernails now, why did she start this project?
So she started it because she used to get her nails done every week with her daughter. And then her daughter died when she was 16. And so she decided never to cut her fingernails ever again. And I just thought that, I was just like, I think with so many of these records that seem really wacky and out there and outlandish, in fact, I'd say with all of them, you look behind and you find someone pursuing something that is really meaningful to them.
So did you gain kind of a respect for record keepers by the time you finished your story?
I think I kind of did. I feel like there was a sort of easy version of this piece that I didn't want to write, where it was like, look at these freaks. They're so strange.
Yes.
I think I always wanted to try and work out what it is that motivated people to do this thing that seems really out there to most people. And yeah, I think for a lot of people, they're really proud of it.
I know I've kept you a long time, but would you mind if I quickly just tried to stand on one leg?
Of course. No, please. I'm devastated you didn't do it earlier.
Right, hold on.
Do you have something to wrap around your eyes?
Can I just close them? Or
No, absolutely not.
Whoa, you became like an adjudicator.
What's going on? I'm the only person here who knows what the guidelines are.
There's a video of me, so you can see me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got this tie.
That tie will do perfectly.
All right, would someone start the timer?
Yeah, okay, so countdown, 3, 2, 1, go.
Did you bounce around as much as I have?
Yes.
That didn't go well.
At the end of the show, what's next for Joel Stein? Maybe he'll take a nap or poke around online.
Our show today was produced by Kate McAuliffe, Joey Fishground, and Nisha Venkat. It was edited by Lydia Jean Kopp. Our engineer is Amanda K. Wang. And our executive producer is Catherine Girardot. And our theme song was written and performed by Jonathan Colton. And a special thanks to my voice coach, Vicky Merrick, and my consulting producer, Lauren Zelaznik. To find more Pushkin podcasts, listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm Joel Stein, and this is Story of the Week. You were working on this story for a year?
Yeah. It took so long, partly because there was travel involved.
Is that a record of some kind?
Maybe.
The longest someone worked on a story about the Guinness Book of World Records?
Finally.
I'm pretty sure you have.
Finally, my achievement.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.